This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says a major accomplishment of General Soleimani was to reinvigorate the resistance front. On the third day of its extensive maneuvers, the Iranian army successfully tests new domestically made anti-missile and air defense systems. Moscow says it has destroyed Ukraine's drone facilities and launch sites. Kiev says it shut down tens of Russian drones. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has described the revival of the resistance front as a major achievement of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei was speaking ahead of the anniversary of General Soleimani's assassination by the U.S. Iran's leader said the late general protected, equipped, and prepared the resistance against the Israeli regime and against the influence of the U.S. and other arrogant countries. He cited the defeat of Daesh terrorists as another major achievement of General Soleimani. Ayatollah Khamenei said General Soleimani propped up the resistance in Iraq and Syria using their domestic potential. Analyst Hakima Sarayeh Birya argues that the Trump administration made a big mistake by assassinating General Soleimani. That is because his mentality remains in place and resistance has turned out to be more powerful and steadfast.
Yes, of course. You know, this is another example of the short-sightedness of the United States. You know, from all the different political leanings that there are in the United States. You know, from the Democrats and to the Republicans. You know, this happened during the time of the Trump presidency, but you see this sort of short-sightedness on the part of the Democrats as well. But this was, the thing that they were thinking, I think, was that. By the physical removal of this personality from the scene, they would put an end to the resistance, to the ongoing resistance that was, you know, becoming more powerful as they went by. But, experience showed that not only didn't resistance stop, but it became more powerful, it became more steadfast, and of course, over the years, Ayatollah Khamenei has mentioned that when you look at the personality of Sardar Soleimani, Shahid Soleimani, you shouldn't look at him as a person, but as a school of thought.
The Iranian army has staged large-scale naval exercises in the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean. The drills are aimed at testing domestically built military equipment and enhancing the country's preparation against potential threats. Yusuf Jalali reports.
The Iranian army's radars have spotted a hostile UAV flying 25,000 feet above its southern waters. Its mission was to strike sensitive Iranian military facilities. The army quickly operated its homegrown Talash missile system. This scenario was part of the last phase of a large-scale military drill held over an area stretching from the Strait of Hormuz all the way to the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean.
The drills cover a 3 million square kilometer area. They aim to test the preparedness of our young personnel and our military equipment that have recently been added to our fleet. Our military might send the message of peace and friendship to our neighbors, but to our enemies, it's a show of power and deterrence.
The three-day maneuver saw the deployment of several pieces of domestically built equipment, from drones and missile systems to warships, submarines, and tanks. The country has been building up its defense arsenal against the backdrop of the West's arms embargoes on Tehran. The army says today it is capable of protecting the country's land, air, and sea borders using locally developed hardware.
All of the systems used in these maneuvers have been developed domestically. They are designed to hit targets at different altitudes. These exercises show that we, as the Air Defense Force, along with other branches of the Army, are fully capable of defending our country using military technologies that have been fully developed domestically.
The Army's Air Defense Force also used its Mirsad missile systems to strike hostile air targets. The Army says it's working on more advanced missile systems to further bolster its deterrent power.
The naval drill engages all of the four branches of the Iranian Army, including its Air Defense Force, which has deployed its latest homegrown missile systems. The Army says this is to boost synergy between its different units, to be ready to confront any potential threats to its territorial waters. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drill.
The Turkish foreign minister has announced a possible meeting with his Russian and Syrian counterparts in January. The meeting would be in line with recent Ankara Damascus reconciliation efforts. According to a statement released after a phone conversation between the top diplomats of Russia and Turkey, the trilateral meeting may be held in the second half of January. The two officials have discussed the recent meeting among the defense ministers of three countries in Moscow. It was the first three-way negotiation held in 11 years. According to the Turkish Defense Ministry, the three countries have agreed to continue meetings aimed at restoring peace and stability to the region. Turkey has been a supporter of the Syrian opposition for more than a decade. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan had proposed a meeting with his Russian counterpart to speed up diplomacy and meet with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The Yemeni Health Ministry condemns shelling civilians in the border regions as a war crime. Saudi led forces have attacked civilians on the border areas of Sada'a Governorate, killing a number of people, including African immigrants. Human rights NGO AIN has urged the formation of an international committee to probe the crimes committed by the Saudi-led alliance against the innocent people of Yemen. The NGO criticizes the international community for turning a blind eye on the war crimes in Yemen. Since the beginning of a UN-brokered truce in April, the number of people killed in Saudi attacks has amounted to around 3,300. Different areas of the border districts in Sada'a are subjected to Saudi missile and artillery shelling on a daily basis. The war in Yemen started in 2015 by Saudi Arabia and some of its allies. It has turned into the biggest human catastrophe of the 21st century. Earlier we discussed Saudi Arabia's continued bombing of Yemen with author and journalist Robert Fantina. Let's take a listen.
Saudi Arabia has a goal in Yemen, and it will do whatever it takes to achieve that goal. And that goal, of course, is establishing a government there that is that the Saudi regime wants. So the fact that this ceasefire has not been a ceasefire is really quite shocking. It shows that the Saudi Arabian government is similar to its ally, the United States, and can't be trusted to maintain its agreements or keep its word on anything. The many war crimes and crimes against humanity that were mentioned by your other speaker, these are the bombing of infrastructure, roads and so on, water reservoirs, bombing of press buildings, bombing of medical facilities, bombing of homes, residences. These are all war crimes. And yet Saudi Arabia is committing them on a regular basis despite the ceasefire. It simply wants to basically have Yemen as almost another area of it, one that will just whose leadership will do whatever it is that Saudi Arabia wants. So that's why it has been assaulting the Yemeni people so brutally for these last 8 years, and why it's escalating it now, because it wants to continue its program of cruelty in order to reach its geopolitical goals.
Saudi Arabia has repeatedly and widely faced accusations of using sports to cover up human rights abuses, a practice called sports washing. Those claims were given a fresh boost with the lucrative move of Portugal star Cristiano Ronaldo to a Saudi club. Ronaldo has signed for 2.5 seasons as player for Al Nassr. Media reports say the 37-year-old could be earning up to $200 million a year from the deal, making him the highest-paid sportsman in the world. He will also reportedly serve as an ambassador for Saudi Arabia's ambitious project to host the 2030 World Cup. There was also an international outcry when Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund took over Premier League team Newcastle. Saudi Arabia has also been using other sports such as Formula One, boxing, and golf to promote its image worldwide. The kingdom faces international criticism for its human rights violations domestically and abroad, including the war in Yemen and the brutal murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. Afghanistan is reporting an explosion outside of the military airport in the capital, Kabul. The spokesman for the Afghan ministry says the blast caused civilian casualties, but he did not specify the exact number. The cause of the explosion was not immediately clear, and an investigation is underway. The military airport is close to the Taliban's Interior Ministry's building. In the past few months, Afghanistan has witnessed an increasing number of security incidents, including explosions. Just 3 days ago, several people were injured in a blast that rocked the capital of the northern Tekar province. Abdullah Mirzadov gave us more details about the explosion in the Afghan capital.
Well, as you might be aware, a rather strong explosion shook the 15th district of Kabul, which is also known as the airport district. This morning, the sirens of ambulances were heard. They were heading to the site. And it is said that the explosion occurred at the gates of military airport, which is a smaller part of Kabul airport. And the Ministry of Interior Affairs of Afghanistan have approved this explosion. They have also said that there are casualties, but they have not yet given any exact number on the number of the dead or wounded. But they have said that there are casualties, and they have not yet clarified whether the casualties are civilians or maybe military forces. Data on the explosion is still limited. We don't know a lot about it. We do not yet know what caused the explosion. The Taliban have not given data on that too. The site is now closed for further investigations, and no group have claimed the explosion yet.
Russia says last night's missile attacks in Ukraine targeted the country's drone production facilities.
On December 31, 2022, the armed forces of the Russian Federation carried out an airstrike with high-precision, long-range weapons on facilities of the military-industrial complex of Ukraine, which is involved in the production of drones.
Storage facilities and launch sites for drones have also been destroyed. Konashenkov added that the strikes have thwarted Ukraine's plans to attack Russia in the near future. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian Air Force says that it has shot down 45 Russian drones overnight. On Saturday night, Moscow carried out several airstrikes in Kiev and other cities in Ukraine, leaving 3 people dead and dozens injured. Ukrainian drones have been attacking military bases deep inside Russia. Most recently, 3 Russian Air Force personnel lost their lives in such raids. Kiev has never publicly claimed responsibility for attacks inside of Russia. The Russian President Vladimir Putin says the West lied about peace and was preparing for aggression, provoking Russia to launch its military operation in Ukraine. He made the remarks in a New Year message aimed at rallying the Russian people behind troops in their 10-month-old war against Ukraine.
For years, the Western elites have hypocritically assured us of all their peaceful intentions, including the resolution of the difficult conflict in Donbass. In reality, they were fully encouraging neo-Nazis, who continued to carry out military and blatantly terrorist actions against peaceful citizens of the Donbass People's Republics. The West lied about peace and was preparing for aggression. And today, they are not ashamed to admit it openly, and they cynically use Ukraine and its people to weaken and divide Russia. We have never allowed anyone to do that, and we will not allow anyone to do that.
Putin also described the war as a near existential fight for the future of Russia. He said 2022 was a year of difficult and necessary decisions. The Russian president pledged victory over Ukraine's, quote, neo-Nazis, accusing the West of being bent on destroying Russia. Putin rejected Ukraine's calls for Russian troops to leave as a precursor to peace negotiations. He added that Russian troops are defending the people of Russia and its historical territory. Putin also slammed the opponents of the war at home, saying that it has separated courage from cowardice. The Ukrainian president also issued a New Year message. Volodymyr Zelensky said 2023 will be about one thing, which is victory.
We fight and will continue to fight. For the sake of the main word, victory, it will be for sure. We have been approaching it for 311 days. We gave it a lot of strength. But at the moment, when it seems that you can't go any further, remember that we have already passed with you.
Zelensky said Ukraine was ready to fight for freedom. He vowed to take back, quote, what has been stolen from Ukraine. Zelensky reiterated that he will stay with his people while they are fighting. Russia launched its military campaign in Ukraine on February 24th, calling it a special operation. In September, four Ukrainian regions that were under Russian control held referendums and voted to join Russia. Ukraine rejected the polls as sham. Greg Simmons, a researcher from the Institute for Russia and Eurasian Studies, joined us earlier with his take on the New Year speeches given by the two presidents.
Well, what we can see is that this is a continuation of this politics of war. So you got the two sides, Zelensky and you got Putin, who are using these particularly symbolic speeches to rally their different audiences. I mean, what they're doing is they're priming and mobilizing different audiences. Putin is directing at a national audience to rally Russian, to continue to rally Russian public support behind this war. And I mean, Zelensky, he's got another task because, I mean, he's in a much more problematic situation where, I mean, the war is not going well for Ukraine at the moment. This is not in terms of territorial loss at the moment. That may happen soon. But what he is doing is facing severe losses and fatigue against Russia. So this is more rallying international support and to continue that.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Recent years, gun violence in America has been one of the most critical challenges facing society. According to a recent analysis, gun-related deaths are the leading cause of death for American children and adolescents. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of AlertNet writes, "The number of children shot and killed in the United States in 2022 exceeded 6,000. The Gun Violence Archive found that at least 6,032 children 17 years of age or younger had been the victims of America's deadly gun epidemic. That was the highest fatality rate since the Gun Violence Archive started keeping a record of gun violence casualties in 2014. The figure reflected a notable increase since last year, when arbitrary deployment of firearms by civilians was found to be responsible for around 5,700 casualties across the country. At least 306 children, 11 years old or younger, have been killed by gunfire, with 668 being injured. Additionally, 1,325 teenagers aged between 12 and 17 died by gunfire, with 3,732 being injured. Recently, the Gun Violence Archive said there had been a total of 609 mass shootings in 2022 in the United States. It is projected to reach around 675 by the end of this year. The grim statistics come after a 3-year-old girl in Kansas City, Missouri, was killed on Christmas Eve in what police suspect was an accidental shooting. The child shooting deaths in 2022 also include 19 students, all 11 years old or younger, killed in a mass shooting on 24th of May at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. One of the youngest victims killed by gunfire this year was a 5-month-old baby who was shot in the head while sitting in a car in Chicago, Illinois, during a 24th of June drive-by shooting incident. The United States has been suffering from an expanding trend of gun violence and episodes of mass shootings. In July, President Joe Biden admitted that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields. In October, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, released data on U.S. firearm deaths last year, counting over 47,000, which is the most in at least 40 years. The U.S. population is growing, but researchers say the rate of gun deaths has been getting worse. America's gun-related homicide and suicide rates both rose 8% last year, hitting unprecedented levels since the early 1990s. The New York Times has also covered the story. The gun death rate for children is nearly 5 in every 100,000. It was flat for more than a decade starting in 2000, and most years fewer than 3 in every 100,000 children were killed by guns. In 2014, the rate began to creep up, and by 2020, guns became the leading killer of American children. According to provisional statistics from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, last year was a particularly violent year. 3,597 children died by gunfire. The death rate from guns was the highest it has been in more than 20 years. While the statistics for this year are incomplete, it is clear that the carnage has not receded. In May of this year, the nation watched as horror unfolded in Uvalde, Texas. Yet another school ripped apart by bullets. Yet another group of children to mourn. yet another shooting in a long line of school shootings, and though the number of school shootings has recently risen to the highest level on record, the overall picture is so much worse. These shootings account for less than 1% of the total gun deaths suffered by American children. No group of American children has been spared, but some have fared worse than others. Last year, nearly two-thirds of gun deaths involved children, 2,279 were homicides. Since 2018, they have increased by more than 73%. Most homicides involve black children, who make up a small share of all children, but shoulder the burden of gun violence more than any others, a disparity that is growing sharply. The number of children who die by suicide with a gun has also risen to a historical high over the last decade. Last year, suicides made up nearly 30% of child gun deaths, 1,078. Unlike homicides, suicides disproportionately involve white children, mostly teenage boys. A decade ago, the number of white children who killed themselves with a gun totaled around 500 annually. In three of the last 5 years, the figure has surpassed 700. The share of gun suicides for black and Hispanic children has been growing as well. Still, in America, among children who die by gunfire, black and Hispanic children are more likely to be killed by others, and white children are more likely to kill themselves. Gun accidents that kill children have also ticked up in the last decade, though they are relatively uncommon, totaling fewer than 150 in most years. Researchers who study gun violence say that is difficult to explain exactly why gun deaths among children have risen so quickly, but most emphasize that the increased availability of guns, especially handguns, which tend to be used in homicides and suicides, and also tend to be stored less safely than some other types of guns, has most likely played a role. The website of Kaiser Family Foundation has also covered the same story. Firearm injuries and deaths in the United States have increased in recent years and adversely affect many children and adolescents. In 2020, firearms became the leading cause of death among children aged 19 and below, and in the first 6 months of 2022, there were over 300 mass shootings across the United States, including the shooting at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. In addition to physical harm, direct and indirect exposure to gun violence can never negatively affect the mental health and well-being of young people. During the pandemic, firearm-related deaths increased among children, with 7 children per day dying of firearms in 2021. From 2011 to 2021, nearly 18,500 children aged 17 and younger died by firearm. During this period, firearm death rates gradually rose until 2017, then slowed through 2019 before sharply rising in the first 2 years of the pandemic. From 2019 to 2021, the firearm death rate among children increased by 50%. This translates to 7 children per day dying by firearm in 2021. Throughout the past decade, assaults have accounted for at least half of all youth firearm deaths, while suicides by firearm have accounted for at least 3 in 10 of these deaths. The spike in youth firearm deaths during the pandemic have primarily been driven by gun assaults. Firearm-related injuries among children have also increased in recent years from 9.9 per 100,000 population in 2010 to 15.5 per 100,000 population in 2020. We'll be right back.
the ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ilahi wa Sayyidi fa'as'aluka bil qudrati allati qaddartaha wa bil qadiyyati allati hatamtaha wa hakamtaha وغلبت من عليه أجريتها أن تهب لي في هذه الليلة وفي هذه الساعة كل جرم أجرمته وكل ذنب أذنبته
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. إلهي وسيدي فأسألك بالقدرة التي قدرتها My Allah and my Master. So I ask you by the power you have apportioned. وبالقضية التي حتمتها وحكمتها And the decision which you have determined and imposed. وَغَلَبْتَ مَنْ عَلَيْهِ أَجْرَيْتَ Through which you have overcome him toward whom it has been put into effect. أَنْتَهَبَ لِي What do I ask you? أَنْتَهَبَ لِي فِي هَذِهِ اللَّيْلَ وَفِي هَذِهِ السَّاعَةِ That you forgive me in this night and at this hour every offense I have committed. كُلَّ جُرْمٍ أَجْرَمْتُ وَكُلَّ ذَنْبٍ أَذْنَبْتُ Every sin I have performed. وَكُلَّ قَبِيحٍ أَسْرَرْتُ Every wicked thing I have concealed. وَكُلَّ جَهْلٍ عَمِلْتُ Every folly I have enacted. كَتَمْتُهُ أَوْ أَعْلَنْتُ Whether I have hidden it or announced it. أَخْفَيْتُهُ أَوْ أَظْهَرْتُ Whether I have concealed it or manifested it. Now, in the previous episodes, we mentioned that in the beginning of our discussion on the Divine Kumail supplication, specifically in the sections where Imam Ali alayhi salam mentioned the different classifications of sin and asked for forgiveness for all of those classes, we mentioned the different sins as well as their consequences. We mentioned the importance of our traditions and how they warn us about the consequences of the sins, specifically the sins that are apparent and hidden, the sins that have kinds of individual aspect, and the sins that somehow corrupt the society. Now, in this part two, Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions the hidden and apparent sins, and he asks Allah to forgive them all. Now, one part of the reason why Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions them again, asked the Almighty Allah for forgiveness again, is that Thursday night is the night of beseeching Allah for repentance, and the supplicant is coming towards Allah supplicating, weeping. He goes into the presence of the Almighty Allah that he would forgive his sins, that he would have mercy and pardon and regard on the supplicant on all of us in this very night. So that is how we can get close to the Almighty Allah. That is why Imam Ali alayhi salam, after mentioning all those classes of different sins, says, Allahumma inni ataqarrabu ilayka bidhikrik. Now that you have purified me, now that I am clean, I seek nearness to you through remembrance of you.
My Lord, my Master, I therefore implore you by the power which you determine, and by the decree which you have finalized and ordained where you have prevailed. You have imposed it to bestow upon me this night and this very hour the forgiveness for all the transgressions that I have been guilty of, for all the sins that I have committed, for all the ugly acts that I have kept secret, and for all the evils done by me, secretly or openly.
Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we could never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua. So we have nothing else to discuss in this part of the Divine Supplication except those classes that were mentioned in the beginning of this dua. الذنوب التي تهتك العسام, that tear apart safeguards. الذنوب التي تنزل النقم, those that draw down adversities. الذنوب التي تغير النعم, those that alter the blessings. الذنوب التي تحبس الدعاء, those that hold back supplication. الذنوب التي تقطع الرجاء, the ones that cut down the hopes. التي تنزل البلاء, and the ones that draw down tribulations. These were the different categories of sins Imam Ali alayhi salam mentioned in the beginning of the Kumail supplication, and then at the end he said, كل ذنب أذنبته, every sin I have committed. Imam Ali alayhi salam mentioned all these classes specifically and individually to warn the supplicant to the people of the universe that their sins have very different aspects. The sins have very different consequences and results, and they cannot be regarded as the same. Of course, sin is a sin. It is against the law of the religion, it is against the tradition of the prophets and the Ahlul Bayt, but it has very different consequences that a true servant needs to be aware of. That is why the different categories of these sins and wrongdoings were mentioned, just to let the supplicant know the importance of them in his own life and in hereafter as well. I assume we are done with this part of the Divine Kumail supplication, dear listeners, and we can move on to the next excerpt in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, yeah.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
School of Soleimani. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. We are on the anniversary of martyrdom of the great anti-terror general and commander of hearts, Qasem Soleimani. As for the third part of this five-part series, you will be listening to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's role in the war against the U.S.-generated terrorists known as Daesh or ISIS. Stay tuned, please. Quds Force is one of the branches of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, whose duty goes beyond the geographical borders of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In other words, wherever the Islamic Revolution is threatened by the global arrogance and Zionist regime and their lackeys, the IRGC Quds Force will enter the scene to fight invaders and ill-wishers. Quds Force has been founded on the basis of Imam Khomeini's thought, as he said, "Today the East and the West know it well that Islam is the only force which can expel them from the scene. The officials should know that our revolution is not limited to Iran. The Iranian people's revolution is the starting point of the great revolution of the Islamic world under the flag of Imam Mahdi. May God have favor on all Muslims and the world people to ordain his reappearance and coming in the present age." According to Imam Khomeini, defending Islam and fighting the big powers requires mobilization of the forces of Islam all over the world. The idea of formation of Defenders of Shrine was based on this very thought of Imam Khomeini. Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani set up the Defenders of Shrine to confront and annihilate the criminal Daesh outfit. His planning and method against these beasts of the current era was based on his precious experiences of the 8-year war against the U.S.-sponsored Iraqi regime of Saddam in 1980s. He considered those experiences as an appropriate pattern to defend oppressed nations against oppressors and greedy powers. He would say, "When a nation is under oppression and an unequal assault has been made against it, if it wants to defend its dignity and nobility in a victorious way, the method of victory that was experienced is the method of the holy defense." Thank you. The fruit of Martyr Soleimani's management and prudence was the formation of the Resistance Front. This front has been shaped up of different combat groups like the Hezbollah of Lebanon, Hashd al-Sha'bi of Iraq, Fatemiyun of Afghanistan, Zainabiyun of Pakistan, Haydariyun of Iraq, Ansarullah of Yemen, and so on. Various forces from Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Afghanistan, and Pakistan were mobilized to defend the Holy Shrine of Lady Zainab in Syria and the Holy Shrines of the Infallible Imams in Iraq against Daesh terrorists. Daesh terrorist grouplet was shaped by the U.S. with the help of the fabricated Israeli regime and some of the Arab reactionary regimes, particularly the Saudi regime, to fight Islam under the guise of Islam. These generators and exporters of terrorism were plunged in the dream of the imminent fall of Syria and capturing of Syria and Iraq by their trained dog. But General Soleimani believed that the big U.S.-Israeli-Saudi plot for disintegration of the region would fail with the help of God. Thus, 4 years later, the political and media centers in the West and the Arab world admitted the defeat of their mercenary elements in the region against the resistance front. The courage and valor of the Commander of Hearts, General Qasem Soleimani, was famous all over the world. In the heat of the battle against Daesh, this sentence could be read on the website attributed to Martyr Soleimani: Mr. Abu Bakr Baghdadi, the day when you were saying in the Friday prayer that we will take Qasem Soleimani too and will put him in the cage and burn him like the Jordanian pilot, I was sitting in the third row just in front of you. In a short time, Daesh terrorist outfit spread its unholy dominance over 70% of Syria and reached near the Iraqi capital of Baghdad. Yet, the unmatched general Qasem Soleimani expanded the domain of defense with the help of resistance forces. Now the nightmare of terrorists rushed to assist the Iraqi besieged Iraqi people. He said on the reason of his presence in Iraq, "When we entered for defending of the Iraqi people, we never separated the Iranian interest from the Iraqi ones. We considered the interest of the Iraqi people as our own interest, saying that if they are victorious, freed and achieve sovereignty, these are the same as our interest. This is the outward and inward of our assistance to Iraq and Syria, and we were never in pursuit of shares and interests." According to the commander of Al-Badr Corps of Iraq, Hadi al-Amiri, Daesh was horrified even by the name of General Soleimani. He said in an interview during the life of this great martyr, "If you browse the Daesh media, you will understand how much the Takfiris are scared of this heroic combatant." Masoud Barzani, former head of the Iraqi Kurdistan, writes in his memoirs on the days when Daesh terrorists had approached Erbil and how he had contacted the embassies of the US, Turkey, Britain, France, and even Saudi regime, but none of them had agreed to help him. He writes, "The only person who came to our help was Haj Qasem Soleimani. He came with 50% of his special forces. He quickly went to the region of clashes. He mobilized Peshmerga forces and everything changed within a few hours. Later on, we captured the Daesh commander and asked him about the reason for retreating from Erbil. He answered, 'Our spies informed us that Qasem Soleimani is in Erbil. So the forces were demoralized and we retreated.'" Thank you. Qasem Soleimani never forgot the oppressed people of Palestine. He caused the Palestinian resistance to enter a new phase of combat. He empowered Gaza as he considered no difference between them and other forces of the resistance front. He would help everyone to fight the fake Zionist regime. The name of Quds played a pivotal role in his life. During the eight-year holy defense, Tariq al-Quds, or the Way to Quds operation, was the first operation in which he commanded two battalions. After the eight-year war, he was appointed as the commander of the IRGC Quds base in the east of Iran to confront miscreants and smugglers. And in the year 1999, he was appointed as the commander of the Quds force. And his blood will be avenged by the liberation of Quds, inshallah.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.